Chapter 18, the last chapter. A gun roared. Not the sharp bark of a Luger, but the heavy, ear-stunning roar of a big bore 45 Colt automatic. Darius shouted in pain as the Luger flew from his hand into the water. Giordino, in a uniform at least two sizes too large, nimbly leaped off the dock onto the sub-deck and shoved the Colt into Von Till's left ear. Then he turned to admire his marksmanship.
"Well, what do you know? I even remembered to remove the safety."
"Nice going," Pitt said. "Errol Flynn couldn't have made a more dramatic entrance." Their faces confused and uncomprehending, Von Till and Darius stood frozen in mute shock. The hot floodlights glared through the mist, burning it away completely, and the guards on the ledge could see that something totally unexpected had occurred on the sub's deck. As if drawn by one string, all five men raised their machine pistols and aimed them directly at Pitt.
"Keep your fingers off the triggers," Giordino's voice boomed against the rock walls. "Shoot Major Pitt and I splatter your boss's brains halfway to Athens. Shoot and you all die. There are guns trained on your hearts. I'm not bluffing. Look at the tunnel."
If there was one thing in the cavern whose supply outdistanced its necessity, it was the machine pistol. There were 10 more of them in the hands of the toughest bunch of men Pitt had ever seen. They were grouped in loose formation around the tunnel entrance, 4 in the prone position, 3 kneeling, and 3 standing. Pitt almost had to look twice to make them out clearly. Their black and brown camouflaged field dress blended perfectly into the craggy shadows. Only their maroon berets, the hallmark of an elite outfit, betrayed their presence to the casual eye. Giordino continued. "Now, please turn your attention to the submarine at my rear." It wasn't exactly the straw that broke the camel's back, but it was the ugly, air-cooled machine gun, gripped by a fiendishly grinning Colonel Zeno on the I-boat's conning tower, that broke the bodyguard's will to fight. Slowly they lowered their guns and raised their hands in the air. All except one. He hesitated and paid the price. Zeno fanned the trigger of his weapon. 2 bullets, no more, spat from the air-cooled barrel in one brief blast. The unthinking, unfortunate guard slumped soundlessly to the ground and rolled limply into the water, staining the brilliant cobalt blue with a growing cloud of red. "Now walk, don't run to the nearest exit," Giordino said casually, "your hands clasped on your heads." Pitt, the tired expression on his face reflecting the gnawing pain in his leg, said to Giordino, "You sliced your timing pretty thin." "The capital of Italy wasn't constructed in 24 hours, Giordino paraphrased pontifically. "After all, swimming ashore, finding Zacynthus, Zeno, and their roving band of commandos, and then leading them through that god-awful labyrinth on the run wasn't the most leisurely of chores." "Did you have any trouble with my directions?" "No problem. The elevator shaft was right where you said it'd be."
Von Till moved close to Pitt, his eyes cold as ice. "Who told you about the elevator?"
"No one," Pitt replied tersely. "Wandering through the labyrinth, I accidentally took a side corridor that ended at a ventilator shaft. I heard the sound of generators somewhere beyond the opening. Their purpose came to me when I was sure of the sea cavern. Your villa sits on a near vertical line above the shoreline cliffs. An underground elevator had to be the only means of moving from the villa to the cavern without detection. The shaft, the cavern, and passageways were a made-to-order arrangement for smuggling, courtesy of the Phoenicians over 2,000 years ago.
"Wait a minute," Giordino cut in. "Are you suggesting that somebody was smuggling out of here before Christ?"
"You didn't do your homework," Pitt grinned. "If you'd read the brochure that Zeno handed out before we started on the tour of the ruins, you'd know that Thasos was originally settled by the Phoenicians to exploit its gold and silver deposits. The tunnels and shaft are part of an ancient mine. Eventually it was worked out and abandoned. The Greeks discovered it a few 100 years later and thought it was some kind of mysterious labyrinth built by the gods." A movement on the dock attracted Pitt's attention, and he looked up. Zacynthus appeared seemingly out of nowhere and stood, staring down at Pitt for several long moments. Finally he asked, "How's the leg?" Pitt shrugged. "It'll probably smart a bit when the barometer drops, but it shouldn't slow up my sex life."
Colonel Zeno sent two of his men after a stretcher. They should be here in a few minutes. Were you able to overhear any of our enlightening conversation? Zakynthos nodded. Every word. The acoustics in here would do credit to Carnegie Hall.
You'll never prove any of it, Von Til said in contempt.
His lips curled in a sneer, but there was a trace of desperation in his eyes.
As I've said, Pitt murmured tiredly, I don't have to prove anything.
At this minute, four war criminal investigators are flying here from Germany, courtesy of the United States Air Force, who were only too happy to lend a helping hand after your little shooting party at Brady Field. Each one of those four men is a specialist. They know every hidden identity trick in the book. Plastic surgery, a different voice, your advanced age, nothing will fool them. I'm afraid it's the end of the voyage for you, Admiral.
I am a Greek citizen, Von Til said arrogantly. They have no legal right to abduct me to Germany.
Cut the masquerade, Pitt lashed back. Von Til was the Greek citizen, not you. Colonel Zeno, will you please explain the facts of life for the Admiral?
With pleasure, Major.
Zeno had left the conning tower of the Japanese I-boat and was now standing next to Zakynthos. He grinned broadly under the big flowing mustache and eyed Von Til with piercing scrutiny.
We take a dim view of anyone who enters our country illegally, and we greatly dislike playing host to a wanted war criminal. If you are indeed Admiral Eric Hybert, as Major Pitt claims, I shall personally see to it that you are turned over to the war criminal investigators and placed on the first plane back to Germany and the gallows.
A most appropriate and convenient ending, Zakynthos said slowly. It saves the taxpayers the expense of a long, drawn-out trial for narcotic smuggling. On the other hand, we lose the opportunity to bag half the illegal drug buyers in North Africa.
Aren't you forgetting that opportunity makes the thief? Pitt grinned.
What do you mean by that?
Simple arithmetic, Zack. Now you know how the heroin drop is made and where. It would be an easy matter to take over the Queen Jocasta, keep the crew incommunicado, and deliver the goods in person. I'm certain the proper authorities could hush up Hybert's capture until you can spring your trap at the cannery in Galveston.
Yes, Zakynthos said consideringly.
Yes, by God, it just might work. Providing I can find a crew to operate the ship and submarine on short notice.
The Mediterranean 10th Fleet, Pitt offered.
Use your influence and make an urgent request to our Navy for an emergency crew. They can be airlifted into Brady Field. Time-wise, it shouldn't set the Queen Jocasta off schedule for more than 5 or 6 hours. If you push the old tub, you can make that up in a day and a half.
Zakynthos surveyed Pitt with mixed curiosity and admiration.
You certainly don't miss much, do you?
Pitt shrugged, retaining his grin.
I try.
There is one thing I wish you'd explain.
Name it.
How did you know Darius was an informer?
I smelled a rat when I searched the Queen Artemisia. The transmitter in the radio cabin was set on the same frequency as the set in your office. I must confess, at the time I thought it might be any one of you.
The field narrowed down to Darius after I swam ashore and met Giordino. He said that Darius had been stationed on your radio during the entire time between the arrival and departure of the Queen Artemisia.
It was a cozy arrangement.
While you and Zeno were on a wild goose chase, keeping an eye on the villa and battling mosquitoes, Darius was comfortably sipping his Metaxa and notifying Hybert of your every move. That's why I had the ship all to myself. The crew members were all busy down in the bilges, releasing the sub. The captain hadn't bothered posting a lookout because Darius had assured him all was clear. What Darius didn't know, and even you didn't know, Zack, was that I intended to swim out and scout the ship from the water. You suspected nothing when Giordino and I volunteered to watch the ship from the beach. It was only at the last minute, when I saw no sign of the Queen Artemisia's crew, that I decided to sneak on board for a closer look. My apologies for not clearing my actions with you, but I was certain that you'd have raised hell and tried to stop me.
I'm the one who should offer apologies, Zakynthos said. I deserve the Dunce Award of the Year. God, how could I have been so blind?
I should have guessed something was wrong when Darius was never able to intercept any messages between the passing Minerva ships and the villa.
I could have relayed my suspicions to you on the road this morning, Pitt said, but it hardly seemed the right time or place, particularly in front of Darius. Secondly, without 100% proof, I doubt seriously whether you or Zeno would have believed my accusation.
You were quite right, Zacynthus admitted. Tell me this. Where did you find out about the Queen Jocasta?
The Air Force has a funny habit about loaning out their vehicles. Sooner or later, they want them back. After Giordino and I left you, we stopped off at Brady Field and returned the truck to the motor pool. Colonel Lewis was waiting for us. It was he who alerted me to the Queen Jocasta. One of his morning patrols sighted her cruising north toward Thassos. The next step was to check the ship's cargo and destination with the Minerva Line's agent in Athens. His reply added to an interesting coincidence. Not only were two Minerva ships passing by the villa within 12 hours of each other, but both were headed for ports in the United States. I began to get the picture. Von Till, or rather Hibbert, intended to switch the sub and the heroine from the Queen Artemisia to the Queen Jocasta.
You might have let me in on your secret, Zacynthus said with a noticeable trace of bitterness. I came within a hair of locking Giordino up when he bounded into my headquarters, demanding that I, together with Colonel Zeno's men, follow him into the labyrinth.
Pitt studied him. The inspector's face was grim.
I considered it, Pitt said honestly. But I figured the less everyone concerned knew, the less chance there was for Darius to get suspicious. I also purposely kept the girl in the dark because it was essential that her message, warning your headquarters of my plans to search for the cavern, reek with serious intentions when Darius intercepted it. My actions were devious, I admit, but my reasons were valid.
To think that the Bureau's finest investigator was shown up by a rank amateur.
Then Zacynthus grinned, and there was a warm hint in the smile that removed the acid from his words.
But it was worth it. Well worth it.
Pitt was greatly relieved. He didn't wish to make an enemy of Zacynthus. He turned and looked at Von Till. The old German stared back at Pitt with a contempt in his eyes that went far beyond mere hate. The only feeling that suddenly welled within Pitt was one of disgust. He spoke quietly, but his cold voice carried to every inch of the cavern.
You would have to die 100,000 deaths, and then some, to repay all the lives you stole, old man. Most men are born and go to the grave without killing anyone. But your list stretches endlessly from the helpless prisoners you condemned to the cold waters of the North Sea, to the schoolgirls you sold into slavery in the scum-infested back alleys of Casablanca. How ironic that a man who caused so many other people to die in agony should die horribly also. My only regret is that I won't be there to see your neck stretched, Hibbert. See your withered old body jerk and bounce when it hits the end of the rope. They say the shock forces the bladder and the bowels to move. That's a fitting end for you, old man. Thrown in an unmarked pauper's grave to rot through eternity in your own filth. Muttering incoherent words, his face distorted in blind anger, and entirely oblivious to the surrounding guns of the gendarmerie, Von Till hurled himself at Pitt. It was the mad gesture of a hysterical man. Giordino's .45 clubbed him on the back of the neck before he took a second step. He fell awkwardly to the deck in a crumpled heap and lay as if dead. Giordino didn't even look down as he holstered the gun.
You cracked him a bit hard, Zacynthus said reprovingly.
Vermin don't die easily, Giordino replied impassively, especially when they're as mean as that old bastard. Darius had not moved or spoken since Giordino shot him. Any other man would have gripped a wounded and bleeding hand. Not Darius. The huge brute let his hand hang limply to one side, indifferently allowing the blood to splatter on the sub's deck. The lost expression on his face reminded Pitt of a newly caged gorilla he had once seen in the San Diego Zoo. An ugly, misshapen monster who could not grasp the meaning of the barred walls and the strange-looking animals beyond that stood 5 deep, observing his every movement. Pitt was very happy indeed that at least 5 of Zeno's gendarmerie had their guns trained between Darius' cold black eyes.
Pitt nodded toward Darius.
What happens to him?
A fast trial, Zakynthos answered. Then the firing squad.
There will be no trial, Zeno interrupted. The gendarmerie have never admitted to a traitor in their ranks.
His voice was grave, yet his eyes were filled with sadness.
Captain Darius died in the performance of his duties.
The cavern suddenly became silent. Pitt, Zakynthos, and Giordino all exchanged puzzled glances over Zeno's use of the past tense.
Darius said nothing. He displayed no emotion, no sign of fear, only a resignation to a fate that precluded even the remotest possibility of hope. Slowly, very carefully, like a man who hadn't tasted sleep in days, he climbed from the sub onto the dock and stood before Zeno, his head bowed.
It seems I have known you for many years, Darius.
Zeno sounded very tired.
Yet I haven't really known you at all. God alone knows why you came to be what you are. It is a pity. The gendarmerie lost a good man.
Zeno hesitated, groping for words, but he could think of nothing else to say. Carefully, almost to the point of meticulousness, he withdrew the cartridge clip from his gun and removed all the shells except one. Then he reinserted the clip and held out the gun, butt first, to Darius. Nodding, as if in secret understanding, and searching Zeno's eyes for a sign that never came, Darius took the gun, turned slowly towards the tunnel, and began walking numbly across the dock.
No goodbye, no regrets, no to hell with you, Giordino said uncomprehendingly.
Just like that, he wanders off and blows his brains out. 10 will get you one that Darius makes a break for it.
His life ended when he became a traitor, Zeno said quietly.
Darius knew it then. He knows it now. An early death was his fate when he dropped from the womb. There was no escaping it. 5 minutes to talk with his god and prepare his soul. Then he will squeeze the trigger.
Giordino watched Darius fade into the blackness of the tunnel and said nothing. The finality of Zeno's words shattered all his doubts over Darius' intentions. Until the day he himself died, Giordino would never understand how anyone could let loose of life so unquestioningly.
He turned back to Pitt.
Time's a-wasting. We're running out of the money.
Gunn is probably having a spastic fit wondering what happened to his precious scientists.
Can't say as I blame him.
The voice came from Knight, who was climbing out of the deck hatch, a sly smile across his face.
Great intellect is hard to come by these days.
An egghead comedian, Giordino groaned. What has science come to? In spite of the pain in his leg, Pitt couldn't help but laugh.
Maybe some of Knight's intellect will rub off on you when you escort him and the other eggheads back to the first attempt. I'm holding you responsible until they're safely on board.
Talk about appreciation, Giordino groaned again, after all I've done for you.
It's better to give than to receive, Pitt said soothingly.
Now hop to it. If you expect to swim out through the submerged tunnels, you and the others will have to retrieve the diving gear from the bottom.
Woodson crawled from the hatch and walked over to Pitt.
Maybe I better stick with you, Major, until you're bedded down.
No thanks, Pitt answered, mildly surprised at the look of genuine concern on Woodson's otherwise expressionless face.
I'm okay. Zack here is going to take me to a hospital full of nymphomaniac nurses, right, Zack?
Sorry, Zakynthos smiled.
Not unless the Air Force has changed its enlistment policy.
I'm afraid the base hospital at Brady Field has the only decent facilities on the island for plugging bullet holes.
The litter bearers arrived and immediately eased Pitt onto the stretcher.
Oh, well, he said at least I travel first class.
Then he sat up.
Damn, I almost forgot. One last thing. Where's Spencer?
Here, Major, right here.
The red-bearded marine biologist stepped from behind Woodson.
What can I do for you?
Relay my compliments to Commander Gunn and give him a present for me.
Spencer paled visibly at the sight of Pitt's bloody leg.
Consider it done.
Pitt leaned over the side of the stretcher and rested it on one elbow. In the outer cavern, 20 feet down, there are several small fissures along the base of the north wall. One has a flat rock over the entrance.
If he hasn't already muscled his way out, you'll find a teaser inside.
Spencer's face registered total surprise.
A teaser? Are you serious, Major?
I ought to know a teaser when I see one, Pitt replied jokingly. See to it that you don't drop him.
Spencer let out a long whistle.
Well, what do you know? I was beginning to think no such creature existed.
He paused for a moment, deep in thought.
Christ, I don't dare damage him with a spear shaft. A net bag, if only I'd carried a net bag.
There's only one way to catch a teaser, Pitt grinned. Grab him by the fin.
The pain was going away now. Pitt's leg felt like it was no longer part of him. The floodlights fused together in one massive blur, hurting his eyes. Everything seemed to slow down, and the voices became far away. Then the stretcher-bearers picked Pitt up from the dock, moving, it seemed to him, as though they were wading through glue. He raised his head for the last time that day.
Zack, one more request. Pitt's voice was down to a bare murmur. What is the girl's real name?
Zack looked down at Pitt and smiled with his eyes.
Her name is Amy.
Amy, Pitt repeated. Never knew a girl by the name of Amy before.
He relaxed and fell back against the stretcher, closing his eyes. The last thing he remembered before the soothing blanket of darkness fully covered him was the sound of a single shot, echoing from somewhere within the depths of the labyrinth.
Tally.
The sky was a brilliant ceiling of blue as far as the eye could see. The summer air was hot and dripping with unseen humidity, encouraged by burning waves from the blazing sun. In blinding radiance, tall white buildings stood like small chiseled mountains and reflected the heat onto the black asphalt pavement below. The traffic was heavy, and the sidewalks were crowded with scurrying office workers on lunch break as Pitt pushed aside the wide glass doors and limped stiffly into the air-conditioned lobby of the Bureau of Narcotics building. For a bachelor, he thought, one of the wonderful things about Washington, D.C. is the overabundance of girls. They come in every size, age, and disposition, and swarm like chattering locusts throughout every government office in the city, providing the hungry male with all the advantages of a rich kid running amok in a candy store. Pitt selected his most charming devil-may-care smile and offered it to a trio of giggling secretaries who exited the elevator. They returned his smile, accompanied with the usual combination of cursory and demure glances that women are prone to allow for strange men, and then wiggled past him into the lobby, sneaking an additional peek at him over their shoulders. A moment later, playing the role of the wounded warrior to perfection, Pitt leaned heavily on his cane and limped from the elevator onto the thick carpet of the eighth floor. In the center of the anteroom, a dozen girls, displaying an unrestricted forest of nylon legs, sat at a dozen desks and furiously assaulted a dozen typewriters, never once hesitating to look up at him. He moved slowly over to a well-bosomed blonde whose desktop contained a small rectangular sign. Information. Then, for a moment, he stared down at her, admiring the view.
Excuse me.
She didn't hear him over the din of the clacking machines.
Excuse me, Pitt repeated loudly.
She turned and noticed him.
May I help you?
The voice was cool, the big hazel eyes unfriendly. Pitt admitted to himself that he had to go along with her icy greeting. The white turtleneck sweater, the green California sport coat, the handkerchief casually fluffed from the breast pocket hardly categorized him as an executive or important Washington bureaucrat.
I would like to see the director of the bureau.
I'm sorry, she said, turning back to her typewriter. The director is extremely busy and cannot see anyone. Contempt and anger began to mount in Pitt.
Inspector Zakynthos made an appointment for me.
Inspector Zakynthos' office is on the fourth floor, the girl droned mechanically. A gunshot couldn't have received more attention than the resounding bang from Pitt's cane as he slammed it on top of the receptionist's desk. The typist's eyes burst wide, and their hands froze above keyboards, sending the anteroom into a sudden dead silence.
Her face drained of all color, the large-chested blonde stared up at Pitt, a fear mushrooming inside her.
"Okay, dear heart," Pitt said menacingly. "You get up off your well-rounded little bottom and you go and inform the director that Major Dirk Pitt is waiting to keep the appointment set by Inspector Zakynthos."
"Pitt? Major Pitt from Numa," the blonde gasped. "Oh, I'm sorry, sir, but I thought..."
"Yes, I know," Pitt offered. "I'm out of uniform."
The blonde jumped from her desk, snagging a stocking in her haste. "Right this way, Major. They're expecting you."
Pitt grinned at her, grinned at the other girls sitting awed in their chairs, felt self-satisfied at the admiring expressions from all 24 eyes, the bovine, adoring gaze reserved for celebrities and movie stars. It inflated his male ego.
"Keep typing, girls," he said good-naturedly. "Mustn't keep the Bureau waiting for all those letters and reports."
The blonde led him down a long hallway, slowing her pace every so often to allow him to catch up. She halted and rapped on a walnut-stained door. "Major Pitt," she announced, and then stood aside to let him pass through. Three men rose as he walked into the room. The fourth, Giordino, remained comfortably anchored to a long leather couch.
"I thought I'd never see the day," he said, "Dirk Pitt hobbling around on a cane."
"Just practicing for my senile years," Pitt retorted.
A short, red-haired man with a zeppelin-shaped cigar stashed jauntily between his lips came over and shook Pitt's hand.
"Welcome back, Dirk. Congratulations on a great job in the Aegean."
Pitt stared into the griffin-featured face of Admiral James Sandecker, the crusty chief of the National Underwater Marine Agency.
"Thank you, Admiral. Any word on the teaser yet?"
"Only that it's alive and still swimming," Sandecker answered. "Since Gunn had it flown over last week in a special tank, I haven't been able to get near the goddamn thing. A horde of scientists have been crowded around it, ogling their damn eyes right out of their sockets. They promised me a preliminary report by morning."
Zakynthos came across to greet Pitt. He seemed younger, much more relaxed than when Pitt had last seen him 3 weeks previously.
"Good to see you walking again," Zakynthos said, smiling. "You look as mean and nasty as ever."
He took Pitt by the arm and led him over to a tall man standing by the window and introduced them. Pitt studied the director of the Bureau and was studied in return by hard gray eyes that peered intently from a high-cheeked, pockmarked face. It was a face straight out of a police lineup. Pitt amusingly reflected that the director looked more like a narcotics smuggler than the chief administrator of several thousand federal investigators. The director spoke first.
"I've looked forward to meeting you, Major Pitt. The Bureau is deeply grateful for your assistance."
The voice was low and very precise.
"I didn't do much. Inspector Zakynthos and Colonel Zeno carried most of the load."
The director met his eyes evenly.
"That may be, but you carry the scars."
He motioned Pitt to a chair and offered him a cigarette.
"Did you have a good flight from Greece?"
Pitt lit the cigarette and inhaled deeply. "Air Force cargo planes aren't exactly famous for their cuisine and royal coachman service, but I must admit that it was considerably more relaxing than the flight in." Admiral Sandecker gave Pitt a puzzled look.
"Why the Air Force? You could have flown from Athens on Pan Am or TWA. "Souvenirs," Pitt laughed.
"One of my mementos of Thassos was too bulky to fit in the luggage compartment of a commercial airliner. Colonel Lewis came to my rescue and helped me hitch a ride on a half-empty Air Force cargo plane that was headed stateside."
"Your wound," Sandecker nodded at Pitt's leg.
"Healing all right?"
"It's still a bit stiff," Pitt answered. "Nothing a 30-day medical leave wouldn't cure."
The Admiral eyed Pitt shrewdly for a moment through a blue haze of cigar smoke.
"2 weeks." The tone reeked of cool authority. "I have more faith in your recuperative powers than you have."
The director cleared his throat.
"I've read Inspector Zakynthos' report with a great deal of interest. There is, however, one point he didn't cover. It isn't important, but out of personal curiosity, I wonder if you could tell me, Major, how you came to the conclusion that Minerva-lined ships had the capacity to carry submarines."
Pitt smiled with his eyes.
"I guess you might say, sir, the secret was written in the sand."
The director's lips curled in a humorless smile. He wasn't used to indirect answers.
Very Homeric, Major, but hardly the answer I had in mind.
Strange but true, Pitt said. After finding no sign of the heroine on board the Queen Artemisia, I swam to the beach and began doodling with a stick in the sand. A detachable submarine seemed like an abstract idea at first, but the more I doodled, the more concrete it became. The director leaned back in his chair and shook his head sadly. 40 years, 100 agents from 12 different nations, all struggling under the most adverse conditions imaginable to break Von Till's smuggling operation. 3 of those agents gave up their lives in the struggle. He looked gravely across the desk at Pitt. Somehow it almost seems a tragic joke that our efforts overlooked a solution that was so apparent to someone standing on the outside looking in. Pitt stared at him in silence. By the way, the director continued, suddenly cheerful, I don't suppose you've had a chance to hear the results of our Galveston stakeout?
No, sir.
Pitt carefully tapped an ash in an ashtray. Until 5 minutes ago, I haven't seen or talked to Inspector Zakynthos since we parted on Thassos nearly 3 weeks ago. I've had no way of knowing whether my small assist paid off for you in Galveston or not.
Zakynthos looked at the director.
May I fill Major Pitt in, sir?
The director nodded.
Zakynthos turned to Pitt. Everything went according to plan. 5 miles outside the harbor, we were met by a small fleet of Von Till's fishing boats. A bit tricky at this point, not knowing the proper identification signals. Luckily, I persuaded the Queen Jocasta's captain, with the threat of castration with a rusty knife, to desert the enemy and join our side.
Did anyone come aboard? Pitt asked.
There was no danger of that, Zakynthos replied. A boarding party would have looked too damn suspicious to a passing patrol boat. The fishermen merely stood off and signaled us to detach the sub. Interesting piece of machinery, that sub. The Navy engineers who studied it coming across the Atlantic were quite impressed.
What made it so unique?
It was fully automatic.
A drone? Pitt asked incredulously.
Yes, another one of Von Till's clever innovations. You see, if the sub had an accident or was detected by the harbor patrol before it reached the cannery, there was no way in hell it could be traced or connected to Minerva Lines. And without a crew, there would be no one to interrogate.
Pitt was intrigued.
Then it was controlled by one of the fishing boats.
Zakynthos nodded.
Right up the middle of the harbor's main channel and under the pilings of the cannery. Only this trip the sub carried several uninvited stowaways. Myself and 10 Marines on loan from the Mediterranean 10th Fleet. I might add that the cannery was surrounded by 30 of the Bureau's best agents.
If Galveston had more than one cannery, Giordino said thoughtfully, you'd have been in big trouble.
Zakynthos grinned knowingly. As a matter of fact, Galveston boasts a total of 4 canneries, all located on pilings over the water. Giordino didn't have to ask the obvious question. It was written all over his face.
I'll put your mind at ease, Zakynthos said.
The Bureau's Gulf Ports Department had each cannery under surveillance for 2 weeks before the Queen Jocasta's arrival. The tip-off came when one of them received a shipment of sugar.
Pitt raised an eyebrow.
Sugar?
Sugar, the director offered, is often used to adulterate the heroin and boost the quantity.
By the time pure heroin is cut by the middleman and cut again by the dealer, the original supply is increased by a substantial amount.
Pitt thought for a moment.
So the 130 tons was only a beginning?
It could have been the beginning, Zakynthos answered, if it wasn't for you, old friend. You're the only one who saw through Von Till's plan. If you and Giordino hadn't arrived at Thassos when you did, the rest of us would be sitting up in Chicago about now, forming a daisy chain and kicking each other into Lake Michigan.
Pitt grinned.
Write it off to luck.
Call it what you will, Zakynthos retorted. As things stand at the moment, we have over 30 of the biggest illegal drug importers in the country waiting for indictment, including everyone connected with the trucking company that transported the goods. And that's only the half of it.
When we searched the cannery office, we found a book with the names of nearly 2,000 dealers from New York to Los Angeles. For the Bureau, it was comparable to a prospector discovering the mother lode. Giordino let out a long whistle. It's going to be a bad year for the addicts. That's right, Zacintha said. Now that their main source is dried up and the local law enforcement agencies are rounding up the dealers, the users are about to face the worst drug famine to come along in the last 20 years. Pitt's eyes left the room and gazed out the window, seeing nothing. There is just one more question. Zacynthus looked at him. Yes? Pitt didn't reply immediately. He fiddled with his cane a moment. What became of our old friend? I've seen no mention of him in the newspapers. Before I answer you, take a look at these. Zacynthus pulled a pair of photographs from a briefcase and laid them in front of Pitt, side by side on the desk. Pitt leaned over and studied them carefully. The first was a snapshot of a light-haired man who wore the uniform of a German naval officer. He was caught in a relaxed pose, standing on the bridge of a ship and peering out to sea, his hands resting carelessly on a pair of binoculars that hung around his neck. The face in the second photograph stared back at Pitt with the familiar leer of a shaven-skulled Erich von Stroheim. A huge white dog stood at the lower half of the picture, crouched as if ready to spring. An involuntary chill crept through Pitt's body as he remembered all too vividly. There doesn't seem to be much of a resemblance. Zacynthus nodded. Admiral Hibbert did a remarkable job. Scars, birthmarks, even his dental fillings matched Von Till's. What about fingerprints? Impossible to prove anything. There were no known records of Von Till's prints, and Hibbert had his altered by surgery. Pitt sat back, puzzled. Then how can we be sure? The uninvited detail, Zacynthus said slowly. No matter how exhaustingly they try or how diligently they plan, all criminals get their tails pinned to the wall by the uninvited detail. In Hibbert's case, it was Von Till's scalp. Pitt shook his head. I don't follow you. When Von Till was a young man, he contracted a skin disease called alopecia areata, which caused complete baldness. Hibbert didn't know this. He thought Von Till had shaved his head in the Prussian tradition, so, quite naturally, he took to the razor. It didn't take the war criminals' investigators long to spot the growth. There was, of course, later evidence that confirmed Admiral Hibbert's identity, but the hair was the first nail in the coffin. Pitt suddenly felt a vague mixture of relief and satisfaction. Has he swung yet? 4 days ago, Zacynthus said matter-of-factly. You saw nothing in the newspapers because there was nothing. The Germans kept his capture and death quiet. They're sick and tired of having the mud of their Nazi past rubbed in their faces every time an old war criminal is ferreted out. Besides, Hibbert didn't have the same notoriety as Bormann and a few others of Hitler's personal clique. Makes you wonder how many more are scattered around the world, Pitt murmured. The telephone on the desk buzzed, and the director picked it up. Yes, yes, I'll pass along the good news, thank you. He replaced the telephone in its cradle, his pitted face split in a wide grin, and he turned to Sandecker. That was your office, Admiral. Allow me to be the first to offer my congratulations. Sandecker rolled the cigar to one side of his mouth. What in hell for? The director, still grinning, stood up and laid his hand on the Admiral's shoulder. It seems that your marine oddity turned out to be a viviparous female. Consequently, you, sir, are now the proud papa of a bouncing baby teaser. The steaming heat was beginning to fade, and the lengthening shadows were stretching far behind the late afternoon sun when Pitt limped out onto the sidewalk. He paused a moment and looked at the city. The streets were busy with homeward-bound traffic, and soon all the surrounding buildings would be mute and deserted. He looked toward the Capitol building in the distance, its white dome transformed into a blazing gold tint from the falling sun, and he remembered another scene on a faraway beach and a white ship and a vibrant blue sea. It seemed so long ago, nearly an eternity.
Giordino and Zakynthos came down the steps and joined him. Zakynthos spoke jovially. "Gentlemen, I suggest that since we are all single, debonair men about town, we combine forces and engage in a bit of fun and frolic." "I'll buy that," Giordino volunteered. Pitt shrugged in mock sadness. "It wounds me deeply, but I must decline your intriguing invitation. I already have a previous engagement." "I think this is where I came in," Giordino moaned. Zakynthos laughed. "You're making a big mistake. I happen to possess a little black book which contains the phone numbers of some of Washington's fairest—" Zakynthos suddenly stopped in mid-sentence and stared at the street, his eyes wide in blank astonishment. A gargantuan black and silver car rolled silently up to the curb and stopped. Elegant in design, majestic in appearance, the regal coachwork seemed out of place beside the more modern mechanized traffic, like a queen of the realm amid a bustling crowd of foul-smelling rabble. And as a fitting touch, the pièce de résistance, a lovely dark-haired girl graced the steering wheel. "Good Lord," Zakynthos gasped. "Bontilde Maybach." He turned to Pitt. "How did you get it?" "To the victor belong the spoils," Pitt grinned slyly. Giordino raised an eyebrow. "Now I see what you meant by a bulky souvenir. I might add that your other souvenir isn't half bad either." Pitt opened the front door of the car. "I think you both know my ravishing chauffeur." "She reminds me of a girl I once met in the Aegean," Giordino said, smiling, "but this one is much better looking." The girl laughed. "Just to show that flattery has its reward, I forgive you for that rough ride through the labyrinth. Only next time give me warning so I can put on some decent clothes." Giordino looked genuinely sheepish. "I promise." Pitt turned to Zakynthos. There was a faint smile in Pitt's eyes. "Do me a favor, will you, Zach?"
"If I can."
"I'd like to borrow the services of one of your agents for a couple of weeks. Do you think you can arrange it?" Zakynthos looked down at the girl and nodded. "I think so. The Bureau owes you that much." Pitt climbed into the front seat and closed the door. Then he handed his cane out to Giordino. "Here, I don't think I'll be needing this anymore." Before Giordino could make an appropriate reply, the girl engaged the clutch and the big town car slipped into the moving line of traffic. Giordino watched the high-roofed car until it rounded a distant corner and was lost from sight. Then he turned and looked at Zakynthos. "How are you at whipping up scallops with mushrooms in white wine sauce?" Zakynthos shook his head. "I am afraid I've never graduated beyond frozen TV dinners." "In that case, you can buy me a drink." "You forget I'm only a poor civil servant." "Then look upon me as an item on your expense account." Zakynthos tried to look serious, but failed. Then he shrugged. "Shall we?" "Let's." So, arm in arm, much to the amusement of passers-by, the tall Zakynthos and the short Giordino, looking for all the world like Mutt and Jeff, began walking down the sidewalk in the direction of the nearest bar. This concludes the reading of The Mediterranean Caper by Clive Cussler. This book was read by Michael Pritchard.